President Hogan, esteemed members of the Board of Trustees, honored parents, and you, the class of 2010. Doesn't that have a great ring to it? Well, like myself, who's just graduated today, you can understand how great I feel, as well as you do. But right now, I feel like I'm standing between dinner and dessert. So, I'll try to be very brief. You know, writing a commencement speech is really such a challenge. To think that I've got to stand here today and inspire you, when barely 23 years ago, which of course seems like yesterday, I needed this inspiration. As I have my own daughter here in the audience today, she's graduated yesterday, her instruction to me was, "Mom, keep it short and funny." Well, short I could, but funny, I really don't know. All I know is we all just feel so great today. But what I'd like to do is just allude at the beginning to a comment. You know, I've sat through many commencement addresses in my lifetime. I've read through many. But there's been one that I really would like to refer to that has really impressed me. And that was by American columnist, author, two-time Pulitzer Prize winner, and political satirist Russell Baker, who in 1995 addressed the class of 94 at Connecticut College in New London. And his address was entitled, 10 Ways to Avoid Mucking Up the World Any Worse Than It Is. Now, the reason I find this so interesting is that his insight then as to what graduates would relate to is just as apt to today. But of course, I cannot refer to his 10 commandments, today's top 10 list. You read through it when you have the time. But I would like to draw your attention to what he called the best advice he could give students. In fact, he felt commencement addresses were, quote, a ridiculous waste of time. The graduates never take advice. And the best advice, he explained, he could give anyone going out into the world is, quote, "Don't do it. I've been there. It's a mess." Now, this arose, I sound like a prophet of doom. But this arose out of his concern that when he gave the graduating class this homily as far back as 1967, they did not listen. Expressing his disappointment, he explained that they went forth anyway, and look what happened. Within a year, Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy were murdered. Nixon took us all to Watergate, draft riots, defeat in Vietnam, John Lennon killed, Ronald Reagan and his trillion-dollar deficit. All this seems a long time ago. The mess he referred to were your parents' or even grandparents' problems. You think today's issues are greater. But while I say his was one of the best commencement addresses that I've ever read, I would still endorse it, by the way, I would hesitate to take his best advice. I have been out there in the world. It is a mess. And it has been for many decades. But this mess has provided for me, as it will for all of you, the unstinting desire to want to succeed. Like me, you will turn to your heritage and your dreams to overcome adversity, for strong dreams will break strong chains. I often hear young people being somewhat impatient about history, heritage, and culture. In today's world of Google, Facebook, Twitter, and the internet, we seem focused on the now. This instant, and maybe if we're lucky, tomorrow. The experiences and activities of past days appear to be ignored and forgotten. But what is ignored is the sense and understanding that what happens today is tomorrow's history. What we do today and tomorrow and what we experience yesterday will shape and serve us well into the future. Now, when you look at me, what do you see? A woman of an interesting age, not that you probably don't know already, of Asian lineage, but from South Africa. But how do I see myself? I speak to you today as a South African, as an African, as a person of a black origin, as a person of a black person in race-conscious South Africa. I mean, race always drives me all crazy. Don't think rationally. As a person of Indian origin that was confronted by race, racial discrimination, and inequality. I represent a generation that in the 70s and 80s had made a conscious choice to confront the degrading and painful system of apartheid in South Africa. Now, simply put, apartheid placed many brick walls on all spheres of our existence, from educational opportunities to areas of residence to career opportunities. But like my late father, I learned that these were temporary setbacks, and brick walls are there for a reason. Please take note of this. He taught me that walls were not there to obstruct us, but to demonstrate how badly we wanted something. Let me just quickly, briefly, relate a personal story. Now, my dad was a horticulturist in South Africa and tried to establish the first horticultural plant farm in South Africa, in his town. The obstacles were enormous. In this regard, I recollect accompanying my dad to various white-owned businesses where he was verbally abused and was treated in a manner that affronted his dignity, especially in his young daughter's presence. My mom, who is in the audience today, will, I'm sure, recall these turbulent times with a great deal of bitterness. This treatment of my father remains etched in my memory forever. But given his view on brick walls, he was determined to overcome the system. And South Africa failed to break his spirit. As a result, he established the fourth largest horticultural enterprise in apartheid South Africa in the Southern Hemisphere. This was a phenomenal legacy that he left to his family. The lesson that brick walls are merely placed there for individuals who really want something badly. Therefore, I implore you, the class of 2010, including my daughter who is here today, to expect the appearance of these brick walls. For without them, you have surely missed something. Now, besides this legacy, how did I achieve what I did? Ladies and gentlemen, I had good tailwinds. Who are our tailwinds? They're here today. Our parents, our spouses, our friends, our faculty. Like you, my tailwinds are here with me today. This was a term coined by Warren Buffett when questioned by the Columbia School of Business students on the secret to his success. His answer was, I had good tailwinds. So please remember, let me caution you, that once you attain success, you need to recall that these tailwinds got you to where you are today in the first place. You did not get there on your own. And once you do, you will prepare for the next phase of your life, that of enabler. Now, as a graduate who has benefited from the tailwinds provided by the University of Connecticut, as an academic and as a human being having overcome enormous adversity in difficult times, I implore you as fellow Huskies to embrace the challenges that you face after today, to cloak yourselves in it, and to carry the Yukon flag with great pride. This will surely guarantee you the success you desire, while at the same time strategically placing you in a position to ensure that you play your part in undoing the mess of the world. Nelson Mandela, with whom I worked for many years, has been my greatest mentor, enabler, and inspiration. And in recognizing the power of young people, had the following to say. You are critical to our future. The economy depends on you. Hand in hand with many sectors, you have the energy to lead your nation in achieving this goal. Education is the great engine of personal development. It is through education that the daughter of a peasant can become a doctor, that the son of a mine worker can become the head of a mine, and that the child of farm workers can become the president of a great nation. It is what we make out of what we have, not what we are given, that separates one person from another. Education is the most powerful weapon you can use to change the world, unquote. As I leave you now, I thank the University of Connecticut once again for this great honor I received today. And I dedicate my honor to you, the class of 2010. Thank you.